You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Josh Nelson joins us. His musings online at Filmology.com and on Twitter at Filmology as well. Josh, welcome.
Good afternoon.
So, Kameeka the Treasure Hunter, I tell you what we'll do. We can't play the trailer or any dialogue because, to be honest, the script's actually kind of incidental in this film, isn't it?
Yep.
In fact, I noticed that the second credit was the cinematographer. So when they bring up the credits, the first credit is the actress at the centre of it, who's also clearly an executive producer, then the cinematography. The look and the sound, especially, the sound is extraordinary. But we'll play a bit of the music, if we can, in a moment. Describe this film, Josh. Not an easy one to describe.
Okay, in simple terms, if I can, the film revolves around Kumiko, played by Rinko Kikuchi, who was nominated for an Academy Award, for Best Supporting Actress for her role in Babel. She played a deaf girl in the Tokyo sequences in the film Babel. I think she's a pretty extraordinary actress, and she also appeared in that awful Pacific Rim film, unfortunately.
Was she in Pacific Rim?
Sadly, yeah.
So you couldn't get two more different films.
I know. This brings her back into, I think, a really strong role. So she's a softly spoken, reclusive woman living in Japan, living by herself, with the exception of her bunny, Bunko. Well, she's fairly browbeaten. She's living, a fairly depressive lifestyle.
Intensely depressive.
And she's obsessed, in particular, with the Coen brothers' 1996 film Fargo, which she watches on VHS repeatedly, almost obsessing over each details because she believes that the suitcase of money that's left behind by Steve Buscemi in that film is actually real, and she wants to set forth over to Minnesota to reclaim the buried treasure.
So it's actually quite an odd film. I don't know if people recall in Fargo when Steve Buscemi, I can't even remember how, but he's, half his face is falling off and bleeding, and he buries this suitcase of cash in the snow. And she even goes to the point of making a tapestry out of the screenshot of the spot on the fence line where he buries it. But it's a really curious film, Josh, because I want to talk about what it looks like first. There's a shot where she walks into the library and she actually ends up getting a map, basically stealing a map from the library. This extraordinary shot where she walks into between the bookshelves and the camera looks through over the heads of the books, so over the books and beneath the shelf, and you can see her eyes three or four bookshelves away. So there's quite a few shots where you think, wow, you actually could frame that. And, shoes squeak, doors slam, people breathe. Like, the sound is incredibly omnipresent. There's actually quite an intense scene where the espresso machine steams when she undergoes, she's sort of trying to meet up with someone and actually can't handle the social interaction. And that's what brings me, I guess, to the question I had about it. This is actually someone's mental disintegration. This is someone falling to pieces. And I found it a bit odd. It's sort of incredibly beautiful, yet at the same time, no one's really cottoning on to the fact that she's in real distress. And I wasn't sure if, I suppose that left me feeling a bit queasy.
Look, it is, and I think part of that is tonally there's a jump midway through the film. So it's almost a film in two parts. The first part is very much focused on the everyday reality, the dreary, depressive reality of her Tokyo existence. It's very clear that she's living a depressive existence. She has all the hallmarks of depression. And I thought that was really engrossing. I was completely captivated by her character then. I thought Kikuchi nails that performance of that sort of depressive personality. But the film then, when it shifts to Minnesota, takes on a completely different tone, and almost a magical realist tone. And I think they're trying to mimic the Coen style in that second half of the film.
It doesn't have the same... there's something about a Coen brothers film, and it is very like Fargo, of course, because she meets a police officer who, in many ways, is like the Frances McDormand character. I mean, it's not a carbon copy. However, when the Coen brothers have those notes, they sort of, I don't know, they resonate, I guess. Someone drops a line and it's both weird and in some ways speaks to something universal, whereas this was just a bit more, it's just kind of painful to watch. It's like, wow, she's in distress.
Yeah, someone else had a similar response to this film. I wasn't quite in distress. I was actually sort of captivated more by her performance and the sense of depression that the film establishes in that opening half. But where I think the film comes unstuck is because it's trying to do two very different things, and that's fine, but it almost doesn't quite pull off the magical realism. And there's that transition moment where she describes herself as a conquistador and she wants to head off to Minnesota to get this buried buried treasure. And the segue between Tokyo and Minnesota is marked by a transition in the soundtrack, and where we hear a song called Dreams. It's almost as if to set up the idea that what we're about to see could actually be a dream sequence, but they don't really want to stick to it. So the moment the film fell away from me is a moment with the cop, a sequence with the cop, where he tries to point out to her that she's an idiot and reality is reality and fantasy is fantasy. And that broke the spell for me, because I thought the film was keeping us on her side and her slightly skewed way of viewing the world.
It sort of broke the fourth wall a bit in the way that a Coen Brothers film doesn't.
Absolutely. And tonally it didn't gel with the rest of it, because it switches then back into fantasy potentially in the latter stages of the film, which I appreciated more. But, you know, I've heard this film also criticised from in terms of its racial politics and the representation of her. I don't think that kind of washes.
The Japanese are somehow specially exotic.
And I don't think that washes at all well with me. No. I don't think this is the film for that argument. I think the film is aware of that, and we have the ignorance of the white people. Like, we have a sequence where an elderly woman gives her a copy of Shogun, and sort of, you know, she plays the role of the ignorant.
That's a Coen Brothers. That kind of works.
Absolutely, and that works. But the sequence with the cop shifts the balance back in favor of the kind of the Minnesotan and plays her almost like a child. And that broke the spell for me. And it was only the only real moment of the film that did break the spell. Other than that, I was kind of on board with this film, because it has a mysterious tone. It's atmospheric. The soundtrack,
it's intensely atmospheric.
The soundtrack is exquisite. In fact, I think it may have worked more if it had pushed further towards that atmospheric magic realism in that second section, and then just have a film that's stark opposites between depressive reality and fantasy. And I think that would have played on the mental illness aspect in a far more effective manner.
Kumiko the Treasure Hunter is the film we're talking about. It's on at, I guess, your average Palace. Is it on at
Palace Cinemas
well?
And Nova, yeah.
And Nova, yeah. It's a really odd film. Just going to play you a little bit of the music, and you'll see there's a little bit of dialogue in there. I just want to try and convey, I mean, this is intensely atmospheric. The music matters, every frame.
I'm just trying to figure out how... I was lost once. I saw the light.
It's not me!
Yeah, look, sadly, that doesn't... It's a very difficult film to describe, but it's beautiful, isn't it? I mean, it's an extraordinary aesthetic experience.
It's stylistically stunning. I think maybe the best way of trying to describe this, capture the two halves of this film, is it's a modern-day folktale. I mean, the fact she's wearing red, the Red Riding Hood, and the fact she goes into the woods and the snow, I mean, these are all those kind of tableaus that are part and parcel of the folktale and the fairy tale. So the film is conscious of those. I'm not sure it pulls it off perfectly, but it's a really engrossing film.
Look, 1300-222-774 is the phone number. It is very much a quest film, a journey film. Your favourite quest movie, your favourite journey. Someone's mentioning National Treasure with Nicolas Cage as a good quest film. We'll notch that one up to experience. Stand By Me is a quest movie, indeed, from Cam. I like that. Willow is Novak's nomination in Newport. Well, quite a few of you nominating Stand By Me. And Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? I guess that is a quest movie. Let me ask you, Joshua, I want to get to a few calls, 1300-222-774 on, you know, the big search films. But the people who made this are clearly they're Coen Brothers fans. They are brothers themselves. They're being touted as the new Coen Brothers. Is this film enough to put them anywhere near?
Well, I think they're going to need to separate themselves from the Coen Brothers in order to do that. I mean, this film owes such a debt to the Coen Brothers. In fact, we see footage from Fargo repeatedly throughout the film. So it's more a kind of a love letter, I guess, to the style of the Coens. I think if you're going to establish a career like that, you probably need to carve out your own sensibility and style. And there's evidence in here that they have a unique take on it, because they are also doing something quite different from the Coens. I mean, the sort of that two-act schism is very un-Coen-esque, if that's a term.
Yeah, no, but I know what you mean. One more note that really jarred with me. It's based on a true story. It is based on a true story, as well as the little subtitle at the beginning of the film. And I'm not... I don't know if I'm comfortable with a fable made out of something that really happened. I don't know. It didn't.
But that's also a link back to Fargo, because Fargo is partially based on a true story.
Of course.
And the film opens with a very blurry, grainy VHS title card that says
probably.
Based on a true story, and it's not until halfway through the film we realise they're not necessarily talking about this film, but Fargo, the film that this film is going to reference. I think it's an interesting play on reality
would
and fantasy.
Would you recommend the
degree.
Film to a lot of
yeah,
people?
Yeah, look, I really would. Yeah. I think from an atmospheric, from a stylistic point of view, from a performance, I think Rinko Kikuchi is a great actress. Yeah, I think this is something, and it looks and sounds great on a big screen too. It's a big screen type of film.
On 774 ABC Melbourne, you're listening to Raphael Epstein.
You shall not pass!
And I wonder if that happens at your place when someone's trying to get to the toilet and someone else says no! Because it happens at my place. Josh Nelson is with me. Too much information. Kumiko the Treasure Hunter is the film we're talking about. Favourite Quest films. Josh, have you got one?
I'm not just wearing the Goonies t-shirt by coincidence.
Too.
Goonies.
Josh, I should say, by the way, Josh is so devoted to this segment. His t-shirt always matches whatever we're talking about. We really should take a picture and send that out. Bill and Ted movies are my favourite Quest movies. It's from Bishi in Altona. Now, someone mentioning a film I haven't thought of in a long time, Spider and Rose with Ruth Cracknell. A wonderful journey of insight and memories. Also, it sent me on a musical journey. It was the first time I'd heard The Cruel Sea. That's from Kathy and McKinnon. Didn't recall Cruel Sea being part of the soundtrack, but that's a good film. 1300-222-774 is the phone number. We've got a few more Quest films to throw your way. You're a little shy on the phone. You can call. We've got one. Let's see what we can bring up out of the Magic Quest box. Have a listen and see if you can identify this film.
I came here to save you. Oh, yeah? And who's going to come to save you, Junior? I told you. Don't call me Junior. Look what you did! I can't believe what you did!
And that's every good reason why you should not be excited about a remake starring Harrison Ford. But mind you, that's the third Indiana Jones film?
It is.
Last Crusade, yes.
It's where the magic ended on that franchise,
where the magic,
I think.
Crashed, burned, and descended to hell, I think. Robert's called from Preston. Hey, Robert.
Hey, how are you, Raph?
Good. What's your quest?
My quest is Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah, that's a good quest film. Yeah, that is a classic. That is, and it really bears repeated viewing in the 21st century as well, doesn't it?
And again and again.
Yeah, genius, pure genius. I like it, Robert. Josh, do you want to give a quick shout-out? We don't have too much time, but The Tribe at Acme. It's from Ukraine. It's called The Tribe. It already sounds daunting.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty challenging stuff. Limited screenings just this weekend and next weekend. It focuses on a young man who moves into a boarding school for the deaf and suddenly gets drawn into a world of violence, robbery, and prostitution, all run by a tribe of students within the boarding school, including two female students who are run as the prostitutes. This film is notable for a number of reasons. One is the entire story, non-professional actors speak entirely or communicate entirely through Ukrainian sign language. No voiceover, no subtitles, limited music and limited close-ups as well. From memory, the entire film is mid and wide shots.
How do you even know it's Ukrainian sign as opposed to English sign?
I read the production notes. So I've never seen anything quite like this. It's a deliberate tactic to put the audience at an emotional remove, and it's quite a cold story. I mean, it's pretty dour-looking film, but really remarkable and a sort of that slow-build, discomforting type of narrative. Look, it's fascinating because on the one hand you have the audience being put at arm's length through the lack of an easy access to understanding the characters and what's going on within the narrative, but because we don't actually get any scenes from non-deaf actors or non-deaf performers or characters speaking in Ukrainian and having subtitled kind of sequences, we're also included in their world. We're stuck within that world, so it's inclusive at the same time. It's keeping
us. It sounds
us
emotionally daunting.
Oh, look, it is, and it has one of the most powerful scenes that I can remember. Look, I don't get all that squeamish watching cinema, but there's a scene in this film where the camera doesn't cut away where the cold sweats were coming on, and felt a little bit queasy, and it's an unforgettable film. Look, this is not a
date film.
I was about to say, not a date film, not a popcorn film, but if you're interested in challenging cinema, and just from a purely formal approach to this type of storytelling, yeah, this is an unforgettable film.
Okay. So that is The Tribe. It's Ukrainian. It's on at Acme this weekend and next weekend. The other film we were talking about is Kimiko, the Treasure Hunter, which you can see at Palace Cinemas and the Nova as well. And look, someone else mentioning Fandango, which from memory is either Judd Nelson or Kevin Costner's very first film. And there's a remarkable opening where they drive along the highway in some beautiful old Chevy. They are going to, I think it's either close to Mexico or into Mexico, to dig up a bottle of champagne or something that they have buried. And it's got a fantastic Elton John track, which is Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. Tell me if you remember the opening to the film. Have a listen to this. Very young Kevin Costner and Judd Nelson, and keep the music going. And they're driving down the freeway, sort of leaning out of the car, picking up beer bottles. It's actually quite a good film. I'm so glad somebody texted that in. That is a wonderful first film. We might leave Elton John going underneath the weather. Josh Nelson, thanks so much for coming in.
Pleasure as always.
You can pick him up online at Filmology, spelt with a PH.